This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. With this being the last week of Tony's vacation, our astute communications team here at the Family Research Council found a couple of great guest hosts to fill in, and I really think you're going to enjoy today's lineup. A little later in the show, Washington Watch Live producer Russ Jones will talk with a couple of outstanding guests as they discuss a possible abortion ban in Texas and a judge in Wyoming who is being punished for saying she would pass off same-sex marriage requests to other judges. But first, last week, President Trump took a very strong stand via Twitter, conveying his opposition to transgendered individuals serving in the military. He said, quote, "After consultation with my generals and military experts, please be advised that the United States government will not accept or allow transgender individuals to serve in any capacity in the U.S. military. Our military must be focused on decisive and overwhelming victory and cannot be burdened with the tremendous cost and disruption that transgender in the military would entail," end quote. The commandant of Coast Guard took a different tack when he said, quote, "The first thing we did was reach out to the 13 members of the Coast Guard who are transgendered. We've made an investment in you, and you have made an investment in the Coast Guard," end quote. On Monday of this week, Dr. Jerry Johnson, president of the National Religious Broadcasters, sat in for Tony and talked about this with FRC's executive vice president and retired lieutenant general, Jerry Boykin. They also took calls about it during that show last Monday.
Welcome, General Boykin.
Well, thank you very much, Jerry. I'm delighted to be with you today.
Well, all right. How should we think of this in terms of the military? I mean, this is not theoretical to you. You've been in the chain of command. How should we be thinking about transgender service in the military?
Well, Jerry, I think the statement in Donald Trump's tweet that has the most meaning here is what the military mission is, and he said it. They should be focused on a decisive and swift victory. Mm. That is the mission of the military. Remember back to 1963 when Douglas MacArthur stood in the dining facility at West Point, and he said to all the cadets, "Your mission remains determined, fixed, inviolable. It is to win the nation's wars."
Yeah.
That is, statutorily, that's the military's mission.
Well,
anything that's a distraction from that, it just cannot be allowed to distract us from a single focus on winning the nation's wars.
Well, right now, even studying the issue is a distraction. I mean, it's sort of an exercise in social experimentation and so forth, but there's also a financial cost. I think your team has been studying this. What would it cost to do these surgeries, for instance?
Uh-huh. Peter Sprigg has done a lot of research on this. And over a 10-year period, we're talking about a cost that the low end is about $1.9 billion.
Billion.
At the high end, ooh, could go up to $3.8 billion. Now, keep in mind, when these people are going through the process of the surgery and the hormone therapy, not only are we paying for that therapy and for that surgery, but we're also paying their pay and allowances while they are doing absolutely nothing except transitioning from one gender to another. We are paying the pay and benefits of people who are not ready to deploy and help win the nation's wars. Mm. It comes back to the single mission of our military on almost every question here associated with transgender. What is the mission of the military, and how do you contribute? You see, Jerry, this is the question that Congress should ask themselves before they ever make a decision relative to our military, and it's the first question the president should ask with regards to our military. How does this policy enhance our ability to win wars? And in the case of the transgenders, you cannot demonstrate in any way how this enhances our capabilities to go out and defeat the enemies of America. It is a total distraction. And Jerry, I'll wrap up what I have to say here by saying this. My son, my third son, my youngest son, wanted to follow in the footsteps of his two older brothers and his dad and be in the military. The Army would not take him because when he was 12 years old, he was on Adderall for 6 months for ADHD. Now, you tell me how they can turn him away and then bring someone in that they know is going to be a non-deployable for at least a year while we pay their pay and benefits while they go through this transition. You tell me, what's the equity of that?
Well, they don't even know who they are, someone in that condition. General, this is slightly different, but it has to do with the chain of command. You know, clearly the president has said, all right, this is the way it's going to be. He's the commander-in-chief. And you've got a few people celebrating the idea that some of the brass, you know, is resisting and applauding this. What do you think about that?
Well, first of all, I don't think that the brass is resisting, with the exception of the Coast Guard. What they said was, and this has confused a lot of people, is we won't implement this policy until we get directions from the White House.
Okay.
That is what is should be expected. The service chiefs and the Defense Department are doing exactly what they should do. They get the guidance in writing from the president before they develop the supplemental policies they would implement. The Coast Guard, on the other hand, has said, well, we work for the Department of Homeland Security, and we're just not going to do this. Well, yeah, you do work for the Department of Homeland Security on a day-to-day basis. You also have statutory Title 10 responsibilities. Title 10 meaning military. Because in every conflict, the Coast Guard is, elements of the Coast Guard are deployed. But if you look at the long-standing tradition and history of the Coast Guard with regards to military regulations, they've always followed the bulk of military regulations on personnel matters, on promotions, and that type of thing. They've followed the military almost to a T. So the guy is stepping way out of, way out of his lane, and I hope that our president will deal decisively with him.
And, folks, it's important to remember that it wasn't until Obama's seventh year that he started playing around with this. And actually, the Army and the Air Force had been asking for a two-year delay on the earlier order. And what you're saying, General, is actually President Trump will need to issue an official order. You know, Twitter doesn't really make policy that you can pass down the chain. Folks, you're listening to General Jerry Boykin on the line with me. This is Jerry Johnson from NRB filling in for Tony Perkins. We've got a caller, several callers on the line. Don from Alabama. Don, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
How's it going?
Doing well. What do you think of this notion of transgender folks serving in the military?
Well, I don't think it's a good idea at all. I served in the United States Naval Reserve during the Vietnam era, and my father was an airplane mechanic in the United States Navy during World War II, and I agree with General MacArthur, and Admiral Nimitz would have said the same thing.
Yeah, I think so.
The purpose of our military is to win our nation's wars, period. And anything that goes against that really is a danger to our nation.
Thank you, Don. Thank you for your service, by the way. General, your reaction to that?
No, I think he represents the attitude of the majority of Americans. Mm. At least the polls show that. Only 23% of those surveyed supported the idea of transgenders in the military serving openly.
Mm. Hey, we've got Ricky from the Marines calling. Let's hear from the Marines, Ricky. What do you think?
Yes, sir. I think even having this discussion is total insanity. I agree with our first commander-in-chief. If he found out any homosexuals, they were beaten, flogged, and I'll be discharged immediately out the service from George Washington. I mean, this is totally insane. You can go throughout the Bible. Whenever Israelite backslid, God will let them be defeated by their enemies. To have transgender perverts in the military, that is so stupid, idiotic. The thought of that is foolishness beyond comprehension.
Thank you, Ricky, for calling. Well, as you can see, it's a pretty emotional issue, General, for a lot of people. I mean, what's interesting is this was comedy with Maxwell Klinger in MASH, you know, 30, 40 years ago, whatever. And, you know, what this guy's reflecting is it says something about our country that we've, you know, gone off into this this kind of distorted human sexuality. As, again, it's a sexual experimentation, social experimentation. But your point is it's really threatening the security of the country and the morale of the military.
It is indeed. And I think that if you look at, and you said it earlier, in his final year, Barack Obama set the stage for this. Elections have consequences.
Yep.
In his final year, he set the stage for this, thinking that he was going to lock Donald Trump into having to follow through with a policy that he implemented because it would be too far down the road not to follow through. And I think Trump surprised certainly the Obama acolytes, but he surprised an awful lot of people in the country when he came out with this policy. And let me tell you, I think that it shows that he's thinking from a common sense perspective.
Well, that's right. Thank you, General Boykin, for your service. Thanks for calling in today.
Glad to be with you.
You can find out more about Jerry Johnson and Jerry Boykin when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider a gift to Family Research Council as they continue to fight for your values in Washington, D.C. and around the country. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back to talk about a Wyoming judge and her religious liberty case that's being appealed to the Supreme Court.
The Center for Medical Progress continues to release shocking videos that expose the lies and crimes of Planned Parenthood. Come to Values Voter Summit to hear from David DeLeiden, the heroic undercover journalist behind the Planned Parenthood videos, as he discusses his journey and the courage it takes to stand up for the unborn. Other invited and confirmed speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Michelle Bachmann, Franklin Graham, Dana Loesch, and many more. Register now at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. Wyoming Judge Ruth Neely is in hot water for answering a reporter's question about what she would do if a same-sex couple came to her for a wedding. In Wyoming, magistrates may decline wedding requests for nearly any secular reason, but the Wyoming Supreme Court has decided to punish her for telling the reporter she would refer some marriage requests for religious reasons. Joining Washington Watch Live producer Russ Jones on Tuesday was Alliance Defending Freedom Senior Counsel Jim Campbell to talk about this case.
Jim, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
Well, set the stage here. Tell us where you've been and where you're at and where you're headed here.
Sure. Well, this case started in 2014. Judge Neely was called by a reporter who suspected that she held conservative Christian views and beliefs and thought that because of that she might not be willing to marry a same-sex couple. And so the reporter called her up and said, "Aren't you excited to be able to marry same-sex couples?" And her response was an honest no. And when he followed up and said, "Well, why not?" she explained it was because of her religious beliefs about marriage and the fact that she believes marriage is the union of a man and a woman. So the reporter publishes a story. That story is noticed by somebody at the Judicial Ethics Commission in Wyoming, and they bring charges against her. And then we can fast forward all the way to just last week when we filed a request with the U.S. Supreme Court for the court to make it clear that the state can't punish Judge Neely simply for saying that if she were ever asked to do a same-sex marriage, she would need to refer that to another magistrate.
So that all started with kind of a gotcha question, sounds like. And now it's gone all the way, and she has served as a municipal judge there in Wyoming for, what, some 22 years. And in that capacity, she has no authority to solemnize marriages. Is that right?
That's right. One thing that's interesting about Judge Neely's case is she, at the time the case started, held two judicial positions. The first was, as you mentioned, she was the municipal judge in her small town in Wyoming for over 20 years. And but in that position she had no authority to do marriages. In this other position, where she was a part-time circuit court magistrate, she had discretion to do marriages, but she also had discretion to decline to do them for nearly any secular reason. So, unfortunately, the commission tried to remove her from both positions, but fortunately, we were able to convince the Wyoming Supreme Court that they should allow her to remain in her municipal judge position. The only thing that's at issue still in the case is whether or not she can remain a magistrate.
And you know, Jim, I think a lot of people wonder, how can someone be punished simply for expressing a particular belief about marriage? And this question may be causing a lot of folks to choose not to go into catering, not to, to design cakes, not to be a wedding planner. Help us out with that.
Well, that's why this case is so important, because at the heart of it is the question of whether we're going to exclude from public life people who simply state their belief about marriage, and that belief being that it's the union of a man and a woman. The Constitution guarantees, specifically in the First Amendment, all of us the right to live consistent with our convictions. And the state can't single us out and punish us, treat us differently because of those views. And so in this case, particularly where the state allows all the other judges, particularly the part-time circuit court magistrates, to decline marriages for nearly any secular reason. The evidence in the case shows that a judge can decline to do a marriage just because they don't feel like it, because they prefer to watch a football game, or because someone's a stranger and they only want to do marriages for friends and family. In light of all that discretion that the state of Wyoming gives to their magistrates, there's just no good reason why they can't allow Judge Neely, if she were ever asked to do a wedding that conflicted with her faith, to politely refer that person to another magistrate.
So this particular case is both unconstitutional because it targets religion, and it's also raises issues of free speech, right?
That's right. So we have two aspects of the First Amendment involved in this case, as you talked about. We have the free exercise of religion, but we also have freedom of speech. And so, again, we emphasized to the court in our petition we filed last week that all that Judge Neely did was say something. All she did was say, this is my belief about marriage, and because of that, if I were ever asked to do something, that is, perform a marriage in conflict with my faith, I would have to refer that to someone else. She didn't do anything. The court recognized that she didn't hurt anyone. Court also recognized that she didn't injure the public reputation of the judiciary. So we're left wondering, why in the world is she being punished, which is why we're pressing this case to the U.S. Supreme Court.
So you've petitioned the court, and now you're waiting.
Correct.
Yeah, and what time frame are we looking at?
The state has 30 days to file a brief in opposition to the petition that we filed, and then we have a short period of time, a few weeks, to then file a reply. And then at that point, assuming nobody asks for extensions along the way, it looks like early October, the court might consider whether to take it up.
All right. Well, Jim Campbell, Senior Counsel with Alliance Defending Freedom, thank you so much. We're thankful that you're there fighting these fights for us, and we appreciate your work.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Jim Campbell and Alliance Defending Freedom when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, I'll look at a newly passed law that could all but eliminate abortion in Texas.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Recently, the Texas House passed a bill that would prevent private insurance and plans offered through the Affordable Care Act from covering abortions except through supplemental plans. Washington Watch Live's producer Russ Jones guest-hosted for Tony on Wednesday and was joined by Texas State Representative John Smithy.
You contend that people who oppose abortion shouldn't subsidize it through their health insurance plans. Tell us what's going on down there in Texas.
Well, you know, we were very fortunate. We had tried to pass this legislation for the last 6 or 8 years, actually. It was an exception that was put into the Affordable Care Act when it passed Congress. If you'll recall, there were a handful of pro-life Democrats who had refused to go along in support of the bill because it was very pro-abortion. And as an accommodation to them to get their vote, the Obama administration agreed to a provision in the Affordable Care Act that allows states to basically do what we did here in Texas, and that's make abortion insurance optional. And so Texas had never done this, although other states have. And we owe a great deal of gratitude to Governor Abbott here in Texas, who put it on the call, the special call of a special session, which really focused the attention on the issue and I think gave us the opportunity to pass this where we hadn't been able to in the past.
So essentially, it's pretty simple. If you want an abortion, you pay for it.
Well, that's true. You know, the way that it works in many states, and if this bill passes in Texas, is that if you buy health insurance through an exchange or a broad range of plans, you would not be required to purchase insurance for, and we're talking about elective abortion, and in those circumstances, you can elect as an insured whether you want to purchase that coverage or you don't want to purchase it. And for someone who's pro-life and would likely never have an elective abortion, that is really just kind of wasted coverage because you're being forced to pay for a service that you would never utilize. And so to us, it was a matter of personal freedom. Mm-hmm. And also a matter of conscience where people aren't required to subsidize something that a lot of people find reprehensible.
Well, it certainly is a pro-life victory. And what do you say to those who say few insurance plans cover abortion, so the legislation wasn't necessarily needed?
Well, you know, it's true that the majority of plans don't cover abortion. But for instance, in Texas, we have at least 6 of our plans that do cover elective abortions in all or some circumstances. And so even though it's not universal, it is occurring. And the problem is that many people find themselves hooked up with a carrier or in exchange under Obamacare where they really have no choice. So it's almost like the insurance company dictates what coverage they'll buy. And so this is designed to give them that personal freedom to be able to opt out of that.
And the bill does not make exceptions for abortions that follow rape, incest, or fetal, right?
Oh, that's correct. You know, I think some fetal abnormalities be covered in the topic of pregnancy because those have been recognized in Texas law as not technically being abortions, but for instance, a miscarriage. But you know, well, the point that we tried to make was that those people who are many people who are devoutly pro-life feel like it's wrong to take the child really in any situation other than to protect the life of the mother, and because of that, the principle is of this of economic freedom that it would not be fair to make an exception, but to allow people to purchase that coverage if they want it and not purchase it if they don't, so that they don't have to violate their conscience.
And just in the last minute or so that we have remaining, can you bring us up to date on Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton? He's wants a federal court to overturn a ruling over removing Planned Parenthood from state Medicaid funding. Isn't that right?
That's right. And you know, he's done an outstanding job here in Texas and has really stood up for pro-family, pro-life values, and so, you know, I think we all hope he's successful in his efforts.
In that that claims comes from, what, 2015 videos released by the Center for Medical Progress, which appeared to show Planned Parenthood officials agreeing to sell fetal remains, which, of course, you know, that's all tied up in courts. It's amazing when investigators go get information that helps pro-life efforts, and someone like 60 Minutes can do undercover investigations all day long but never get held to that standard.
Well, that's right. The people that uncovered the wrongdoing, they're the ones that turn into the ones that are charged with wrongdoing. And that's, it just doesn't seem right. And it's not right. You know, that, I think that the people who did that did a public service because they did expose the wrong.
Well, what happens next with your bill?
Well, now it goes to the Senate, which has already passed a virtually identical bill, but they're going to have to pass this bill as well. But I understand they're going to set hearings for this weekend and hopefully get the bill passed no later than Monday of this coming week. So the outlook is really good. And, of course, Governor Abbott, who put it on the special session call to begin with, has indicated he will sign the bill immediately when it hits his desk.
And when do you think that'll happen?
Well, hopefully it'll happen sometime by early to mid part of next week. And so it would become effective at the end of this year, but it would be April of 2018 before it could be practically fully implemented. But that's just how the insurance business works. That's as quickly as we can practically implement it. But it would become law, and very well may be challenged in court as well.
Well, Representative John Smithy, thank you so much for your service down there, being in the trenches, and it's people like you that are fighting the good fight, and we appreciate your service.
Well, we appreciate what you're doing as well. You're really very, very much a part of this battle.
If you want to find out more about State Representative Smithy, just head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.